Good evening. This is 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Ahead, Walton Arts Center specializes in bringing people together, but bringing people together is difficult right now. So the venue is releasing virtual performances. We'll learn more later this hour. Today's press briefing with Governor Asa Hutchinson included details about a record high number of additional cases for a 24-hour period, how some team sports might return in Arkansas next month, and an update on the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance website. The Arkansas Department of Health is reporting 455 cases are being added to the state's cumulative total. That's the single highest number added to the total over a 24-hour period. Dr. Nate Smith, the state secretary of health, says 229 of those cases are from the federal correctional facility in Forest City and were known of before the numbers for the last 24 hours were tallied.
These were cases we already knew about, but they had not yet entered into our system because they were done at various labs through the testing efforts of the CDC and the Bureau of Corrections. So those 229 are not actually new cases. The 226 community cases are, of course, a concern. I need to point out, as I have before, this is not a biological phenomena. We don't go from 80 to even 226 overnight because of new infections. COVID-19 spreads fast, but it doesn't spread that fast in a single day. This is largely a matter of increased testing.
He says the state has had at least 2,000 tests a day since May 12th. He also adds there were three more deaths from the virus in Arkansas in the last 24 hours, the fatality total now 110. There are 1,433 active cases in Arkansas, 796 of which are considered community cases. Yell County reported 33 of those newly added cases, Benton County 27, Washington County 26. The State Department of Health also reports 63 cases newly recovered in the past 24 hours. The governor says the positivity rate for testing yesterday, still low, 4.4%. As promised, the governor issued guidelines for some team sports as summer approaches. For high school and community sports, he says intercollegiate sports are a different conversation. Team practices for close contact sports like basketball, football, soccer, and volleyball are prohibited, though individual practice with somebody's own equipment can take place. The governor says those guidelines will be reviewed June 30th. Limited contact sports, including baseball, softball, and swimming, can have practice and competition effective June 1st. If there are ticket sales for any of these sporting events, those sales should take place online. Several other restrictions are in place, such as coaches wearing face masks and no high fives. Dr. Smith says lengthy, complicated directives for overnight summer camps have been issued as well.
These two directives are some of our most complex directives. A lot of work has gone into these, and they're some of our longest directives. So I'm not going to go through them point by point. I'm going to refer you to them. They are complicated because we know that COVID-19 is being spread in many of our communities, most of our communities in the state at some level, and we want to make these activities as safe for children as possible. And that's the reason for the detailed requirements in these directives.
He says those directives have been shared with camps across the state. The governor says the state is continuing to move forward with public and economic health in mind.
We're very careful about phasing it in. We didn't all open up everything in Arkansas on May 4th. We didn't lift every restriction. We've been measured about lifting those restrictions gradually so we can measure where we are. And so we're going to do a lot more studying on it. I've indicated that certainly is a concern. We want to know more about it. But I also, you have to balance that with my belief, as I've expressed, that we're not going to, we never did shelter in place. We're not going to go back to it. We're not going to further shut down our economy. We're going to have to learn to manage this economy, and we're also going to have to stop the spread of the virus. And so you've got to do those two things simultaneously. And so life goes on. We have to educate. We have to make a living. We have to make sure people have an access to providing for their family.
And he says current times require responsible behavior.
I went into a restaurant here for dine-in service. I had my mask on. All the waiters had their mask on. They were doing all following all the guidelines perfectly. When I finished dining, the manager came up to me and said, "Can you make a request of the patrons to understand the requirement to wear a mask until they're served?" And because they had two of their wait staff cursed at by patrons because of the requirement to wear a mask. This is really unacceptable, and it's embarrassing, and people in Arkansas need to understand these businesses are doing what they need to do to protect their own health as well as the patrons. And whenever somebody comes in without wearing a mask, it's not then about your health as much as it is about everybody else's health around. And so it's a very selfish act to say we're not going to abide by those guidelines that are meant to protect you and others. And so I hope that there's a lot of patience, but primarily it's your decision. If you don't want to go in there and dine, that's okay. That's your decision, but don't blame it on the owner of the restaurant or the wait staff there.
The governor says the pandemic unemployment assistance website is now secure and operational. He says more than 15,000 claimants have been notified by email. They can go online to file their claims, and more than 5,800 have entered a weekly claim so far. Almost 4,000 had payments sent out last night. The entire press briefing can be viewed at the governor's YouTube channel. This is Ozarks at Large. For most of the past 10 weeks, conversations about the future here have been about uncertainty and confusion, which is understandable. But today, we have a glimpse of the fall that is full of promise. The Fayetteville Public Library is in the midst of a massive expansion. And a few weeks ago, masked up, I went across the street and took a safe tour of the work in progress. Here are highlights of what was an hour-long tour led by Sam Palmer, the Director of Facilities and Sustainability the Fayetteville Public Library.
So, Kyle, we are standing in front of the circulation room. It's been transformed. What the patrons used to see here is the checkout desk. The checkout desk is completely gone. It's a glass wall now. And behind that glass wall, you're going to be able to see the sorting system. This is the conveyance and sorting system where everybody used to drop off their books when they drive up or when they come in the building and feed the books in at the front desk. That is now all visible to patrons. So now they can come in, drop off their books in the drop-off that's located just beside this glass wall, and you're going to be able to watch your books go down the conveyor, turn, and be transferred into a sorting system, an automatic sorting system that they'll be able to watch it happen. And it's one of the most exciting parts of the library. Whenever I do tours here, the patrons love to see that sorting system. And we wanted to get that out front and central so everybody can see it. Let's go inside.
All right.
So we're going to go downstairs now, and we're going to take a look at what used to be a staff-only area, and it's being transformed into a public and staff area that is going to enlarge the public areas of the building. We're going to go down the fire escape, and Kyle, I think you've been down here before. We used to go in and watch those books getting sorted. So that sorting is gone. This is out and all now one big room. And we're looking to the south, and you can see the glass along the south wall. All that glass is going to get removed, and that is literally going to connect us to the expanded part of the library. And it's going to make it feel like it was all meant to be. It was all there from the beginning. And this will now become a public space where it was a staff space. One of the fun parts about the expansion is we had 88,000 square feet in this existing building, and a little over half of it was not used by the public. It was only by staff. And with the expansion, we're now making over 80% of the square footage usable to the public. This is the expansion. And look how big it is. Look at all the glass along the east and west walls. So it just sheds light into the space. This was intentional to try to reduce the amount of electricity needed to light the building. Let's walk down the corridor, and we're calling this the bridge because on both sides you'll be able to see over the ledge. On one side you'll be able to see over into the children's grade school area, and on the other side you'll look out over what we're calling the gathering glade, which is a big open space about the size of the Fayetteville Square. And it's just a big open grassy area for things like outdoor concerts and outdoor events that you'll be able to hold out here. It'll hold about 1,000 people in this space. We are gonna go into the teen section. Now this is a dedicated teen section, which basically means that it's gonna be teen only. Now there'll be a teen librarian stationed right about where we're standing at the entrance. But for the most part, adults are not allowed in this space. The teen collection will be in here, as well as two study rooms, two study nooks, and then a gaming center dedicated just for the teens.
My goodness, the views.
It just keeps going on, doesn't it? Just everywhere you go. This was also one of our concerns. We didn't want to destroy the beautiful vistas out of our original library. And so in the expansion, it was very clear that we wanted to preserve these beautiful views out the windows. And over again, everywhere you go, there's just another beautiful look out the window, isn't there? We'll step over on this side. This is the teaching kitchen. It's roughly 1,700 square feet. And what they're doing now is they're installing the exhaust hoods for the teaching islands. There'll be two teaching islands, and then there'll be another section that will just be for various cooking pieces of equipment like ovens and fryers and so forth. Each island will provide resources for 8 students, so a total of 16 students in the space, and a teacher. And it will all be state-of-the-art equipment and be prepared to teach them in the culinary arts. It's still a partnership with Brightwater Culinary Arts School in Rogers. And with the students in this space, as they finish their senior year in high school, if they take all the classes, they'll be able to graduate high school with a culinary arts degree. Again, just as we stepped outside the kitchen, just the brightness just opens up. You have an enormous deli seating area. It'll seat about 50. Inside and out, and then we have the deli cut out right here. We'll have a deli counter and a menu and everything you need to be able to produce a good deli environment. All this is still yet to be developed. You know, every area in the space is being developed and growing and providing these resources to the community, and we keep looking for individuals to help this partner, sponsor the space. This is one of those unique spaces that could really develop into more and more opportunities for the public with the help of donors to the library. We're walking down this hallway right off the deli. We're walking down towards what we're calling the multi-purpose room right now. The multi-purpose room is a large space, roughly 8,000 square feet. And the purpose of the multi-purpose room is to provide a space for people to gather. We can hold concerts in the space, author events, teaching environments. It'll hold about 750 people.
You know, one thing that's surprising to me is how good the audio is through masks.
Well, it's not bad. I can barely breathe. When I go upstairs, I can't breathe anymore. So, this is the Center of Innovation. This room is going to be a video editing and video production room, and the other side is going to be an audio production room, audio recording studio. Both of these rooms will have superb sound qualities. The most advanced technologies that there are will be had in these spaces just for the purpose of providing to the community an elite space where they can record video and audio as they want to. And it's free and it's open to the public. So this is just an amazing space. It has a subfloor. They're gonna re-pour this over with gypsum and it's going to be a sound isolating floor. So I could hammer on one side and it won't attenuate into the next space. We have, we're turned around looking the other direction. We have a simulation lab on one side and a virtual reality lab on the other side. Now, what these two spaces provide is the community can step into a simulation lab and they can hop into an airplane simulator or a backhoe simulator or a bulldozer simulator, and they can log official hours on these two pieces of equipment, these multiple pieces of equipment. These actual log hours, FFA has approved this system, and you can log not necessarily flight hours, but training hours on the system. The more we construct, the more we build, and the more we put the covering on this building, the more, honestly, the library staff is beyond words.
Sam Palmer is the Director of Facilities and Sustainability at the Fayetteville Public Library. His tour was conducted a few weeks ago, and we both wore masks and were safe. The target date for the expansion opening is in October, but that date is, of course, contingent on supplies and shipments during a pandemic. The library has resumed limited hours with limited capacity on limited days. You can find the hours and days of operation at faylib.org. And more about the features of the expansion can be found at beyondwordsfpl.org.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Support for KUAF comes from Westwood Gardens, featuring locally grown plants offering a variety of annuals, perennials, herbs, roses, trees, and shrubs. Selected to perform well in Arkansas's summer heat, westwoodgardens.com or Facebook for more.
This is a Thursday edition of Ozarks at Large. The stages at Walton Arts Center, like the stages at almost every other venue in the region, state, country, and world, have been barren recently. But the staff at Walton Arts Center is making sure some performances are available for the public. There are virtual performances that can be streamed, and there is an every weekend performance called Hearts to Home. Each of those episodes available for 48 hours. Each has local restaurant partners. This week, we reached Jennifer Wilson, Public Relations Director for Walton Arts Center, to ask her about the arts presenter during a time without live arts.
Just because, you know, it's such a change in our routine and the things that we become, you know, used to. But for those of us at Walton Arts Center, you know, we spend a whole year building a season, and then to get, you know, a little more than halfway through it and then have to start deconstructing it, it is like really painful for us.
Yeah. But here we have, in the interim, until we can get back into indoor venues with some regularity, Walton Arts Center providing some opportunities that we can watch at home. Tell me about these.
Right. So we've been trying to do a little bit of a switch to try to provide some art opportunities for people, because we know during times that are very stressful and lots of things going on, the arts provide an outlet to escape and to process and to just explore some different things that you maybe don't get a chance to explore. So we couldn't pass up on this. So there's a couple of different things that we've been doing during this time. One is our virtual stage, which if you go to our website, waltonartcenter.org, you can get access to the virtual stage page there. And this is a page that is curated by our programming team. And it's a list of performances, digital performances that are available. So we are adding stuff each week. So if you are, you know, just having a really stressful day, like a lot of us have been lately, and you just need a little arts moment, you can go there. And these are things that are available on demand throughout the day. So that's one of the things that we've done. And then the other thing that we've done is we've started a weekly webcast that airs 6 p.m. every Saturday on our Facebook page and on our YouTube channel. It's called Hearts to Homes. The idea behind this was we wanted to create a family-friendly art experience where you could come together, sit down, come together, watch something together online just for fun. And then the other element that we wanted to tie to this was we wanted to find a way to support local businesses.
Right.
So for each one of our episodes, we partner with usually about three, sometimes it's four local restaurants. So what we're doing is encouraging people to go grab dinner, take out, carry away, whichever way you want to do it. So go grab dinner, bring it back, and have dinner together and enjoy an art experience.
It's dinner and a show.
It's dinner and a show.
This week, this Saturday night, it's going to be the Artist Fear Festival Orchestra. We didn't get to have them in person this year. What do you know about Saturday night's performance and show?
Yeah, so we know. So it's going to focus on, like we said, Artist Fear Festival Orchestra. So this is our 10th anniversary, which is a really odd way for us to celebrate this, but we're going to. And it's going to include performances that have been previously recorded of the Artist Fear Festival Orchestra. It's also going to include some of our quartets and groups that are also part of AFO. So Dover Quartet is one of them. We're going to have interviews with Corrado Urbaros, which is great, and then some members of AFO. So it's an opportunity to get to experience some of the performances, but then also get a little interviews and kind of backstage views of what they're doing now and how they're, you know, surviving through all of this and how they're still creating art.
And this is going to be available. The ones in the past, previous Saturdays, have been, and this one this Saturday, available on Facebook and YouTube starting Saturday night at 6, and you have a limited time to experience this.
Yeah, you know, we've kind of done this for a reason. You know, part of the special thing about performances is, you know, you kind of have to be there to see them. So we wanted to create a little bit of that same kind of feel with these as well. You know, we want to give people a chance to see them, but we also want them to end at some point in time. So they, you know, like we said, they air at 6 p.m. on Saturday, and they're available for 48 hours. And you can get to them, like you said, Facebook and YouTube page, but you can also go to our website, and there's a Hearts to Home page there that will send you directly to the link. So you can get to it that way as well.
Who are some of the other artists who have been featured on the Saturday nights?
So last week we had a focus on Trail Mix, you know, because this would have been Artist Fear's month that we would have been doing stuff. So we had Candy Lee, we had one of the local mariachi bands perform, you know, with a focus. Oh, we also had someone from Fayetteville come in and talk about trail etiquette during this time and things to be aware of. And we announced our winners of the Artist Fear photo contest. So we did that last week. And, you know, we tried to tie it to different themes. So we did one that was focused on Mother's Day. We did one around Cinco de Mayo that was focused on Hispanic culture and featured the Latinx theater project, which was really fun. And then we also did one focused around Mosaics, which was the festival that we had created this year to celebrate the cultures that make up Northwest Arkansas, and this one was focused on Indian culture. So we did one that was focused on Indian performances as well. So we've really tried to theme it to stuff that is going on that week to give it that that immediate tie as well.
So the next Hearts to Homes is beginning Saturday night at 6, available for 48 hours. Any idea how long you'll do this?
We, you know, we're going to go as long as we can, and we're thinking, you know, at least for the next month, and it could go further than that. One of the other things that we've been really successful in doing in this is partnering with other local arts organizations. So it is, you know, Arts Center in the Ozarks, or it's Latinx, or, you know, it's the Open Mouth Poetry Series. So it's an opportunity for us to help those organizations get their creative efforts out as well. So it's been a really great opportunity, and we still have tons of ideas for shows. So we'll be going for a while now.
Finally, I imagine, I mean, because every arts venue, not just in the country, but in the world, is going through this. Have you had a chance to speak to any of your colleagues elsewhere outside of Northwest Arkansas or the state about how they're doing?
We've been on several different webinars, of course, for arts organizations. And, you know, they run the gamut from going completely dark to, you know, staging full plays and streaming them. Mm. and you just have to, you know, you just have to kind of figure out what you're able to do. It was very important for us to try to fill this void of providing an arts experience, help local businesses, and then also help our local arts organizations. So that's kind of how we ended up doing what we're doing. It could still change over time, you know, as this continues. I think there's, you know, there's one thing that people probably don't realize, but theaters were the first ones that probably closed down, and we will probably be the last to come back.
Yeah.
So we're trying to figure out how to, you know, inhabit this space when we can't get people together. I mean, that's what we do. That's like you said, you know, we get people together to experience stuff. So it's just a time for us to kind of learn and try to figure out, you know, what we're going to become during this time.
It's just so frustrating because it's times like these when the most important thing seems to be to get people together. And right now, the least safe thing we can do is get people together. It's just frustrating.
I know.
Yeah.
I know, and it's very challenging. I mean, everybody needs that space to come in and process and, you know, work through everything that's going on, and we haven't been able to do that. So it's been a challenge.
Jennifer Wilson is the Public Relations Director for Walton Arts Center. You can learn about the Hearts to Home series in the Walton Arts Center virtual stage at waltonartscenter.org. The partner restaurants with this weekend's Hearts to Home episode, by the way, are 28 Springs and Siloam Springs, Big Orange and Rogers, and Marketplace Grill in Springdale. We talked with Jennifer earlier this week. This is Ozarks at Large. We continue now our Business as Unusual series. It's where we speak with owners of niche businesses about how they've been adapting and how they've been reaching their customers during the pandemic. Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek has this report from a textile and craft shop in our area.
We're going to do folds. We're going to do, and I'm going to just start from the simplest to the most complicated, but I'll demonstrate this first one. So it's what Tricia and I like to call the crumple.
That's Bea Apple you're hearing, and she's in the middle of an indigo dyeing workshop that normally she and Tricia Logan would be holding in person at the Hill Folk Shop in Bentonville.
Is it okay if this is chunky at first?
Yes. If it's chunky, just give it like, keep stirring it and maybe just give it a minute or so to hydrate.
Logan, who owns Hill Folk with Apple, says this was their first attempt at going about their workshops this way. We spoke last week ahead of the event, which they held last Thursday night.
So the way it's working, it's local. It's almost all local people, so that they would get the kit delivered to their doorstep with the supplies. And then we will all be together on Zoom to do the class. So we're hoping that works out well.
Hill Folk opened about 2 years ago at the 8th Street Market, where it shares building space with other businesses like The Holler, Markham & Fitz Chocolate Makers, and Yayo's Mexican Food.
It's a retail store, but it's also, we do workshops, for textile-based workshops, so indigo dyeing, weaving, spinning, embroidery, knitting. My business partner, Bea, is a master knitter, so we do a lot of that. We have our own line of yarn. And we sell a lot of textile-based and craft items, but also gift items just for the Bentonville and Northwest Arkansas community, candles, that sort of thing, too.
Logan says they've had to postpone all their workshops or move them online while bolstering their shop's presence on the web.
So we pivoted to more of an online business, and our store is kind of set up more for shipping now, which is interesting. So we don't feel ready to open yet. We don't feel like it's safe yet. We're not, you know, there's a lot of uncertainties, but it's also just, it's set up differently. The business has changed so much.
Despite the changes, Logan says they've seen a lot of success with their online store where they sell the crafting kits they've come up with for people to do from home.
So we're creating more video content to go with those. That's been really good for us because it's stuff we've wanted to do forever, but we've always been so tied down to these workshops and being at the store every day. And so we've never had the time to pause and really do that.
Logan and Bea Apple developed their indigo dye kits before the pandemic for the Little Craft Show held back in December. Since then, they've come up with several more.
We've added a knitting kit, a bundle dyeing kit, a mending kit.
As popular as the kits have become, Logan says they are running into problems sourcing some of their materials.
Getting materials right now. raw, you know, fabric and that sort of thing, thread, silk, indigo, that sort of thing is sometimes it's just taking longer to get it. So we're having a hard time keeping some of the kits in stock. So that's one challenge we are facing.
Hillfolk has also started making face masks after getting multiple requests from the local community.
We were kind of hesitant at first. We're like, we feel weird about selling masks. So we were doing, you know, you buy one and then we donate one to the local hospitals for every mask that's purchased.
But they've had a hard time keeping up with the demand. Logan says they'd sell out of the batches they made over the course of 2 weeks in less than 15 minutes.
Now we're doing pre-orders only. So you can, for the people that really want a Hillfolk mask, you know, we have some beautiful fabrics we're using. So we're doing just pre-orders for people who want them, and then we're turning them around in a week.
And while Hillfolk is doing more business than it did last year, Logan says it's still less business than they would have done in a normal year, especially with the opening of the Momentary Art Venue just across the street.
Which was only open for 2.5 weeks before this all happened. And we had started seeing, like, you know, double the amount of traffic from that, which was in 8th Street Market in that whole area. So that was super exciting. So we were excited about our numbers going into the spring. You know, we had thought it was going to be a huge spring.
Once they do reopen their storefront, Logan says they'll have to figure out how to combine their brick and mortar operation with the online business that took off during the outbreak.
We're not sure how we're going to do that because it's set up, you know, totally different. It doesn't look beautiful. It's not a beautiful retail storefront now as it was. So we're going to have to try to combine the shipping area with workshop area with storefront. So that'll be an interesting challenge when we do decide to open back up.
In-person workshops, Logan says, will likely be the last part of their business that they'll bring back. But they are considering their options.
And they might be smaller. You know, we might have 5 people in a workshop versus 15, something like that. And we might try to do outdoor workshops. That's another option we're thinking about.
She says they're keeping an eye on what's happening as more people begin going out this month and will likely wait until June 1st before making any firm decisions about reopening.
We will probably, if we feel safe opening then, I think we'll probably phase in maybe a day and then the next week maybe add in another day that we're open to retail and that sort of thing. Or maybe just shortened hours. Maybe you can come in just a few hours a day. Trying to figure that out.
You can find updates on those plans on Hillfolk's social media channels. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Zuzana Sitek.
Tricia Logan also owns Shindig Papery in Fayetteville with a different business partner. She says they were set to have their best year ever until the pandemic upended weddings around the country. For now, they've been focusing on working with brides as they rearrange their orders for everything from invitations to table settings to accommodate new wedding dates. Logan says they've been doing appointments via Zoom for the last 9 weeks, but plan to resume in-person appointments at the shop on June 1st. Concerts, art exhibitions, even museum tours are taking place online these days, and Raven Cook, the writer and host of Reflections in Black, continues to bring us new editions of her work from her home.
This is Reflections in Black, and I'm your host, Raven Cook. Reflections in Black is a segment dedicated to exploring the legacy of Black Americans in the United States and around the globe. Reflections in Black also provides resources for understanding and hope for all people. Born in 1928 in Wichita, Kansas, June Esther Griffin immediately gravitated toward the sciences. At a young age, her teachers recognized her gift and encouraged her to pursue STEM. With most areas at the time, June Esther Griffin, becoming June Bacon Bercy, had her work cut out for her, being both a woman and African American. Nevertheless, she persisted, becoming the first Black woman to receive a bachelor's degree in meteorology from UCLA. Bacon Bercy would go on to work a series of jobs in the field exploring meteorological impacts on the nuclear detonation sites and was hired by an NBC affiliate, WGRZ, in 1971. While hesitant about entering the field as an on-air reporter for fear of diminishing the seriousness of her work, When the opportunity arose, she boldly broke the glass ceiling for women and people of color. Becoming the first African-American and the first woman to receive the seal of approval for on-air excellence in meteorology, Bacon Bercy would go on to work for the National Weather Service. She would continue a lifetime of service and giving back, but she would also work diligently to encourage more women to pursue STEAM professions. June Bacon Bercy would sadly pass away on July 3, 2019, at the age of 90. But today, we honor the life and legacy of the pioneering June Bacon Bercy.
Reflections in Black is a production of KUAF Public Radio in Fayetteville. You can hear weekly segments on Ozarks at Large, and you can find past editions at KUAF.com. Just search Reflections in Black.
On tomorrow's Ozarks at Large, composer Amos Cochran has a goal to release 7 new works this year.
And these are all things I've wanted to get on the shelf. Like, I knew over time I would release these. But if I'm just going to be at home and sort of cooped up, why not make this year about getting all of that stuff on the shelf?
Music and conversation about the first album in that project on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 on 91.3 KUAF.
Welcome to the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. I'm Paul Gatling. Sarah Huckabee Sanders and her husband have launched a nonprofit organization called Arkansas 30-Day Fund. We will hear from Donald Trump's former press secretary to discuss that new initiative. And a real estate deal of some significance closed a few days ago in Rogers involving both a notable property and a group of notable business leaders in Northwest Arkansas. And some banking news in Fayetteville. One lender is moving in, another is just moving. That's all ahead today on the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report.
Support for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report is provided by the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. ArkansasStateChamber.com. First Security is proud to be only in Arkansas. They offer smart solutions for personal and business banking, plus convenient services and community investment. First Security. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender.
Sarah Huckabee Sanders and her husband, Brian Sanders, have launched a new nonprofit called Arkansas 30-Day Fund. The goal is to help struggling state businesses bridge a financial gap while waiting on assistance to work through the red tape of government relief programs. In a recent interview, Roby Brock caught up with Huckabee Sanders to discuss that new program and what life is like after serving as Donald Trump's press secretary, especially in the age of COVID-19.
You know, like everybody else, this has been a very interesting and unprecedented time. We've had a lot of family time, which has been really good for us after 3 years of running nonstop. It's been kind of a forced slowdown, and we've tried to focus on some of the positive parts of the quarantine, and that has been spending a lot of time together as a family. But we know how difficult it is for so many families. We are trying to homeschool our kids, which has proved to be quite a challenge. I never knew how hard second grade math could be. It's changed a lot since I was in the second grade a long time ago. But we've tried to do what we can to help other people. And that's the reason that I wanted to come on and talk to you about what we're doing right now through the Arkansas 30-Day Fund.
You and your husband, Brian, have started a nonprofit, Arkansas 30-Day Fund. Tell me a little bit about what this is about and where did the idea for this originate?
So a good friend of mine in Virginia had started a similar program. I think like most people across the country, we're racking our brains trying to figure out how do we help other people in this time of crisis. I hear so many different stories and friends who own small businesses that are really struggling to keep the doors open in the midst of everything going on. So we wanted to figure out how best to do our part. And my friend started this program in Virginia. It went extremely well, where they offer small loans, forgivable loans to small businesses across the state. They raise money from the private sector and reinvest that back into small businesses around their state. It's been a tremendous success there. I loved the concept of it and wanted to bring it back to Arkansas. And we're going to officially launch tomorrow. And we're really excited about the response we've had so far just in the last 24 hours.
So what's the goal here? How much money do you plan to raise? How many businesses do you hope you can help?
You know, I'm not really setting a limitation on how much we hope to raise. I mean, we want to help as many small businesses across the state as we can. What we have done is create a program. It's not meant to make a business whole. It's meant to help bridge the gap until they either receive state or federal assistance or the demand for their business comes back. The maximum loan that we're offering is $3,000, but we aren't asking anything for it. We don't want the money back unless a business gets to a place that they have the ability to donate that money back to help another small business. We'd love to see them pay it forward. Otherwise, it's no strings attached money that they can use to help meet payroll, make insurance payments, or just figure out how best to keep their doors open so that they can wait until they get additional financial resources, either through federal, state assistance, or again, until that demand for their business opens back up. This process is super simple. Application takes only about 10 minutes to fill out, and we'll go live tomorrow on our website for people to be able to start applying and hopefully start receiving some of that money by the end of the week.
So small businesses employing 3 to 30 people, has to have been in business for at least a year, owned and operated by Arkansans. So tell me, where does one go to apply? One last plug.
Yeah, so the Arkansas30dayfund.com is where you can go to apply, as well as donate. If you have the ability to donate, we'd love to have you be part of this great organization. But if you're a small business needing help, go to Arkansas30dayfund.com and submit your application. And we'd love to try to help you out. We're going to fund as many small businesses across the state as we can. And again, we are not trying to make a business whole, just trying to help supplement in these difficult times and help save jobs across the state of Arkansas.
So does this go away after the mission is completed, or does this maybe transform into something else?
You know, we'll see what happens. Right now, our goal is just to provide immediate relief for people that need it. We don't want this to be a political operation. We don't want this to be a partisan operation. We want this to be an Arkansans helping people operation. And it's that simple. As long as we can raise money to help small businesses in need, we're going to try to do that.
And that is Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the daughter of former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee and the former White House press secretary to Donald Trump. She has, of course, moved back to Arkansas and has expressed interest in a political future, but has made no commitments on that topic just yet. A new real estate fund led by four notable business leaders in Northwest Arkansas has closed its first acquisition for $32.3 million. OZRE Capital is the new owner of a large portion of Village on the Creeks. That's a 40-acre commercial development along Interstate 49 in Rogers. The real estate fund is managed by Steve Brooks and Connor Eldridge, who are partners with Rogers law firm Eldridge Brooks, and Tom Gordon and Greg Smart, who are the co-founders of Fayetteville-based restaurant chain Slim Chickens. OZRE stands for Ozark Real Estate and Equity. Little Rock-based Encore Bank was involved in the financing. Village on the Creeks was built between 1996 and 2001 and is considered the region's first true mixed-use development. A handful of the buildings in Village on the Creeks do remain privately owned, but the 20 buildings that did change hands total about 220,000 square feet, with a diverse mixture of tenants. And finally, some bank news in Fayetteville. Sterling Bank, it's a $1.2 billion asset lender headquartered in Poplar Bluff, Missouri, says it will open a loan production office on June 1st. The company says it will lease space in a building at 1607 North College Avenue. Arkansas native Jonathan Welch of Fayetteville will oversee the market expansion. which includes plans to eventually open full-service locations in Fayetteville, Bentonville, and Rogers. And Oklahoma-based lender Grand Savings Bank is planning to relocate its Lone Fayetteville branch to a larger building. The company's office on the west side of the downtown square will move to a vacant building at 1925 North College Avenue. You likely know that building better as the previous home for more than 25 years to AQ Chicken House. There are interior and exterior renovations needed before the move is made. Natalie Bartholomew, the bank's chief administrative officer, said the relocation should be completed before the end of the year. Grand Savings Bank operates 3 branches in Oklahoma and 9 branches in Northwest Arkansas and Fort Smith. You can read more about those stories and others on our website. Just visit nwabusinessjournal.com, where you'll find the latest business news each and every day. As always, we appreciate you tuning in to the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. Until next time, I'm Paul Gatling. Thanks for listening.
This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Springdale. 91.3 KUAF is a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. Contributors to our Thursday night edition included Zuzanna Sitek and Raven Cook. Tonight's Reflections in Black with Raven Cook was mastered, just like our entire show tonight, by Timothy Dennis from his home studio. The Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report with Paul Gatling and Roby Brock, part of our partnership with Talk Business and Politics. You can read more about the state's business and political news at talkbusiness.net. And speaking of Talk Business and Politics, tomorrow on our Friday edition of Ozarks at Large, our weekly conversation with Michael Tilley, looking back at the previous 7 days' worth of news. That's on tomorrow's show. Stay tuned next on 91.3 KUAF, the latest edition of the National Conversation, produced by All Things Considered and NPR. It is a live hour of the latest news regarding COVID-19, plus a chance for your questions to be answered and much more. The National Conversation, live from All Things Considered and NPR, begins in about a minute and a half on 91.3 KUAF. After that, Peter Vandergraff and classical music. And don't forget, you can hear classical music at any time of the day if you go to KUAF2. You can find KUAF2 at KUAF.com. You can also find it on your HD radio, either in your car or your home. And you can tell your smart speaker to play KUAF2, and you'll hear great classical music. Peter Vandergraff coming up at 9 o'clock tonight, KUAF2, and round-the-clock classical music at any time of the day or night. We'd love to hear from you, hear how you're doing as we are in, I think, the end of the 10th week of this pandemic. What have you learned? What new hobby have you picked up? How are you coping? You can let us know by taking advantage of the KUAF Connects line. It's an easy process. You just pick up your phone and call us at 479-575-6577. Tell us what you'd like to know. Ask us a question. We'll get back to you. KUAF Connects line, 479-575-6577. We'll be back with you tomorrow at noon for a brand new Friday edition of Ozarks at Large as we go into an odd holiday weekend. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for listening.